Are you cyber attuned?
Well, I can operate the computer, and I have one. And when I was practicing law, it actually enabled me to probably quadruple my output. The computer.
You practiced law before your FAA position?
In the middle. I was in the air traffic controller in the service, and then the FAA, and then I resigned in 82 and practiced law until 2000. And then I retired from that when my secretary retired. She was 72 then. She's passed now, got arrested. But when she retired, I said, when you go, I go. And my kids were already out of the house by then, so I retired from the law, which is a tedious profession at best, and then went back to the air traffic control actually as a retirement job. And that's when 9/11 happened, of course.
It was your very first day.
About 10 months earlier than that, I had come back to the FAA. A friend of mine ran the place down there in Herndon, the national, the command center.
Right.
And he asked me to come. Every year we'd go to Europe to play golf. He'd ask me, would you come on back? He said, because you have no time. I said, the law paid pretty well. I did pretty well. Finally, I took him up and I said, all right, I'll come back. And he said, I'd like to give you this national operations manager job. And I said, well, I'd rather be a journeyman, and learn the stuff that I've missed in all the years I've been gone. And I did that for like 9 months, checked out, with all my peers. He said, you're done screwing around. He thought I was goofing off. And I said, all right, I'll take the job now. And then, of course, that was my first day at that job, national operations manager.
Give you a little hand as you come into the room.
Well, because they were all my peers the day before, it was like one of them, and I had gone up not one grade, but two, a couple of bumps up. So now I'm a big boss, and they were joking, can we talk to you now, and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty much accurate, And in fact, some of the people who are in the film in that scene are actually people who were at the command center were on that day and who worked with me over that time.
Is the heavyset guy who seems to be your main liaison with everybody else, is he one of the real guys?
Yes. There's Tony Smith and Rich Sullivan. Now, both are pretty big guys as far as I'm concerned, but it was in the other...
Who first tells you about the first hijack?
Yeah, that would have been Richie Sullivan, right. He's still at the command center.
Mm.
In fact, I saw him recently. Yeah.
That's the first thing I love about this film. Surprised me, but that a good half of it, if not more, is about air traffic control and monitoring from Boston, New York, FAA, the military in Rome, all that. And that just adds, that is what really got me. Particularly yourself as the being the most real seeming element, character wise. Because I get to know you the best, but.
It was an interesting experience, and I don't know nothing about film, but to have, to be surrounded by all people you know and be very comfortable, it wasn't that, I didn't think it was difficult at all to shoot what they asked.
Right.
And they were happy the way I didn't pay attention to the camera, but I liken, or at least I analogize my ability to do that by trying cases in a courtroom where you would exclude everything but what you...
Right.
And therefore it was very easy to do, slip back into that day and just deal with my subordinates who were giving me information, and I just had to react to the information much the same as I did on that day. So it was easy to slip into. Even though they say you did a great job back, I said, well, gee, I was just doing myself. I don't get it, really.
I think what people are saying, or at least what I felt, is that I've noticed other people playing themselves in many films over the years. And there's just a natural thing that many people do. It's a fairly human thing, which is that when the lights and the camera and other people on the set are looking at you, one naturally congeals.
Protect
yourself. And I didn't feel any of that.
When I first started to have to speak publicly, certainly those things happened to me. That was years and years ago. I got over that pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to be a lawyer and a trial lawyer, you certainly don't want to be freezing up. It's not your it's the client's.
What branch of law were you in before?
I did mostly security and commodity work. I had a major brokerage house was my client.
Okay.
And I did everything when I started. I tried criminal cases. I tried any case you can think of.
Mm.
Civil rights, age discrimination, all that stuff. I did, when you get started, you take every case.
Mm.
And then you start to weed them out and do the ones that you want to do. Oh, and actually, you do the ones that are most lucrative for you.
Mm.
When you get down to that. It's easy to have a corporate client because, you know, it's easy billing them $300 an hour. There's no client having a heart attack because of the size of the bill. And I don't know how anyone can afford to hire a lawyer to try a case nowadays.
Yeah, there's just you have a kind of a, you know, you have, there's a naturalism about you. I really liked your character. I like you right away. In the way I like Joe Pesci, the way I like other guys.
Well, that's very complimentary. I love Joe Pesci, and he does have a very nice personality.
Yeah.
I think. Well,
you just feel, you know, the guy right away. You don't need to get to know him. You know.
Well, it stood me in good stead that ability over the years in making friends and having clients and keeping them and getting along. I mean, it's look, from my point of view, is it much different real life than getting on the film? I mean, you're acting almost every day of your life anyhow. It's not that you're putting up a facade or anything. It's that you present yourself in a certain personality.
Right.
And, you know, if you saw me when I'm fully... If I was sitting fully relaxed and reading a book or something, you'd probably say, and you were friends, you would say, what's the matter? Something the matter? You'd say, no, nothing's the matter. You know, but, you know, when you allow yourself to just, like, kind of slip back, and you have to... I think that life is just a series of small plays. And I certainly play it that way.
Now, the first thing I was struck by when I saw you in Cannes is that you were considerably slimmer.
In Cannes,
you had dropped some weight. It looks like you've been doing.
Since I've retired, I've had as I said often, the only time you can really afford to take care of yourself is when you're not working.
Yeah.
You know, I get up in the morning, I go run my 4 miles. I couldn't do that every morning, or I'm not grabbing sandwiches and stuffing my face on the run. And, you know, those 15-hour days get to you after a while, and you never take care of yourself properly. Yeah, definitely. I've lost probably 10, 12 pounds. And just for that, I'm retired and I can take care of myself. I think it's that. I cook. I love to cook. It's one of my hobbies. And I cook things that are good for me and, you know, instead of grabbing stuff on the road all the time.
You've got a kind of a tri-state area of accent, right?
Well, I was born in Boston, or just outside of Boston, Medford, Mass. But I've lived in New York since the early 70s, 71, 72. So I've kind of acquired... In New York, they think I sound as if I'm from Boston when I elongate the A, if I say park the car or something like that, which doesn't happen often, but sometimes I'll slip back into it. And then when I'm up in New England, they think I sound like a New Yorker, or anywhere I go in the country, they think I sound like that. Oh, you're from New York, they say right away.
Yeah.
There's a certain patois, I'm sure.
Now, when the script is being written, you were asked for your own, for what you said, right? Wasn't that part of the process?
Yes, it was research, and that's how I became involved in it. Was the research of it? Mike Brunner came to the house, interviewed me on several occasions on the phone, in the email, asking questions. What happened here? Mostly, they wanted to know what happened. What was the reaction of the people in the room around me? How did they respond to the various events? And certainly, the chronology of events they were interested in. But the actual words. I think we didn't really work on any actual words, except for the swearing, when they made me go into New York and say Jesus Christ several times into a microphone.
Right.
And they dubbed it over, I guess, is what they do. Because I wouldn't swear. Typically, I don't swear. I mean, not that I'm prudish about it. I would swear, but I don't usually in public, you know, and certainly in business. And I didn't on that day. And Greengrass would come out and say, you know, can't you, you know, give me some, you know, salty language, exactly.
Mm.
And I said, well, I don't usually do that. And of course, all the people back that up that I don't usually do that, swear.
Okay. Again, I just felt that it wasn't really scripted. It felt really natural.
It really wasn't. And you know, that was another nice thing about it, was that we shot, I think we did 8 1-hour takes on the day that we shot the scenes I was in.
And continuous cutting. He shot it.
We shot 1 hour, start to finish, the whole thing. I come in the door, and then the whole thing develops in the timeline, and then cut. And he would say how wonderfully we did at it, and then of course have to do it again, and which we all got a kick out of. But
if I were to be in any kind of film where there's a lot of something serious going on, and the line would that I'm supposed to say says, I've got a really bad feeling about this, I'll tell you right now. I've heard that line in 1,500 TV shows, but somehow that line felt just right. I didn't feel like...
It was actually what I said on that day.
Yeah.
And when the... when the military liaison was who actually came out and told me on 9/11, on that day, he said, Ben, you may want to put CNN up on the screens because, and I have CNN at my desk, but I was not at my desk.
Okay.
We monitor that all the time for breaking events. And he said they were reporting a small plane had struck the World Trade Center. Now, at that point in my mind, American 11 is the last known position was 30 miles north of New York City, heading southbound towards the city. I'm thinking, you know, that's in the back of my mind when he says there's a plane, they're reporting a small plane. When I put it up and I saw the size of the conflagration, I said, I don't have a real good feeling about this at all, or I have a bad feeling about it. I don't know if I said bad or I don't have a good feeling about it, but I did not like the looks of that. And, of course, you don't want to think the worst. That it's, from an air traffic controller's point of view, prior to 9/11, it is almost inconceivable that a pilot of an airliner would hit a plant, a building. Because, as I've said many times in interviews, if you had a gun to his or her head, the pilot, or a knife to their throat, no way would that pilot put that plane in that building. You'd put it in the East River. Put it in the Hudson, put it in the ocean, and there's nothing you could do to stop that. And once he set that in motion, if you shot him dead right there, you couldn't get him out of the seat and fly the plane yourself. And I couldn't, I couldn't reconcile that in my mind. And even when United came on the screen and hit that, United 175 struck the other tower, it was an anomaly. It was a paradox in my mind. I could not get it. I could not figure out. I saw it. My eyes are telling me. I just saw an airliner strike that building, and I'm saying, how in hell could they get them to do that? I couldn't resolve it.
You know what I was struck by is the Newark control tower guy, C-175.
Yeah.
Why didn't they see, United American 11 hit the?
At that speed, and I believe he would have come from another direction.
Came
came from the north and came around and hit it from the east side. So
I heard that he came out straight into it
from the north.
That's what I thought.
Well, then that would have been have been, if you're in Newark Tower, you are south and west of the towers.
Yeah, right.
You're a little bit south and west of the towers, so it would have been the other side.
Yeah.
They certainly saw the smoke and reported that, but did not. Well, they didn't see it. I know all those boys too. They didn't see it at all.
Yeah. It's funny that logical conclusion that you make in the film about how it had to have come from the east. And, it came straight down Manhattan.
Yes, it did. And that we were, at the time, I was having, and we were just getting reports about a United 175 was having a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at that time asking my staff to get in touch with New York City Police Department and see if anyone saw what hit that building. Because, with 8 million people there, someone had to see something on a perfectly clear day.
That's what you keep saying as you're watching the film. You keep saying to this, you almost talk back to the screen, guys, connect the dots.
I need verification. Yeah. Well, you want verification always, in that business. And
well, even just between yourselves, not for a silver announcement. And finally someone says, that's got to be American 11. Somebody finally says it.
Yeah.
Jesus.
I think there's a reticence on the part of any anybody involved in aviation to conclude that the plane is in that building and the consequences of that event. That all those people have died now. And you don't want to lose a plane. I can remember with vivid clarity every plane I've seen crash in my career. In life. I've seen planes crash when I was in the control tower, working in the control tower.
Oh.
In Vietnam, I saw planes crash. When I was when I worked at Otis Air Force Base in the Air Force, I saw planes crash. When I worked at
you worked at the control tower in Saigon or something?
Up in Pleiku in the Central Highlands. And I worked in the radar and the control tower there. And I worked in the control tower at Otis Air Force Base. And I worked in the control tower at LaGuardia Airport. I've seen planes come in, spin out, crash, go over the edge. You see them happen.
Right.
And I can see them all today, as clear as a bell. I can still see United 175. And it was the only thing I kind of like didn't look at when we were shooting the film. The first time I looked at it, and I had the same horrific reaction to it I did on the day I saw it for real.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe when you don't want to believe it, what you've just seen.
Hmm.
And you're just hoping they get out of the plane if it's spinning out or burning under. I've had to testify before the National Transportation Safety Board for aircraft that I've worked on radar and lost on radar. It was nothing I did, but they want to know the circumstances and what happened. Had an Allegheny crash in New Haven, going in and hit the beach houses going in there on a foggy day.
Really?
Yeah, I mean it's horrifying, you know. And then the people trying to get out of the plane and they grabbing the fuselage and their hands just sticking right to the skin of the crane because of the heat. You know, and the flesh. I mean, it's horrible, horrible. I mean, it's not a good way to go.
Yeah.
I've seen mid-air collision.
Right.
Two aircraft go in.
Where
that was at Quonset Naval Air Station. I was working for the Federal Aviation Administration.
Have you got an agent? Are you looking to do any more work?
I do not have an agent. I'd love to do work if they would hire me. I think, you know, I'm retired fully now, so I think I got the time for it. I don't think I do. I do. But I don't know the first thing about getting an agent, so I haven't really done anything about it.
I just think that you know, mainstream movies need that kind of element that you have. It just doesn't, you don't feel like an actor, you feel like you just are, and I just really, that's something I warm to immediately when I see.
Well, good. I'm glad. If they have a need for it, what the hell, I'm a prostitute, I'll sell everything I have.
But every now and then, a guy who is not a trained actor, quote unquote, is perfect.
Well, you know, they did that SAG conversation last night, and
how was that?
It was very interesting. I mean, I may as well have been in the audience rather than sitting with the panel, because it's very interesting to me to hear how they have training there. You know, I heard Christian saying the Stanislaus method and the improv. It's yes, I don't know. It was interesting to hear all the stuff. I don't know any of the technical terms of it, but I do know I have in my life, mostly in law, you know, I can certainly be angry and not be angry at all. And, I can be emphatic, and I've done those things. And, you know, you do them in a courtroom, especially if you're trying a case for a jury. All you are is playing to that little audience right there. You want them to like you. You want them to agree with your set of facts, no matter what the facts are. And it's close. If you're trying a case, it could go either way. Otherwise, you wouldn't be trying it.
Do you happen to remember meeting a guy named Lou Luminick from the New York Post?
Yes, yes.
He's another big fan of yours.
He is. Lloyd Levin sent me the email. He's the one who put me on the some list to nominate for the Oscar. Yeah. Yeah. Is he here?
No, he's based
in the Post. Yeah, New York.
I'm going to go back to the city for December 1st to January 5th. I just love being.
Are you a New Yorker?
Well, I was raised in Westfield, New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
I went to Wilton, Connecticut, and I lived in New York for about 7 years. So I missed the whole thing, around December particularly.
I like the cities. I can live here, too, though. I like being in the city. I do not want to be where there's not pavement.
You live where now?
I live in Long Island, Seaford, about 15 miles east of the city.
Okay.
I like people, and people talk about going here or there, and I say, look, if there's not a 7-Eleven within a block, I don't want to go there. I mean, I need I need some coffee and papers and people. I like the juice of people. I love talking to people. I mean, they've all been, I remember once years and years ago, I was near traffic control at the old Common IFR room at Kennedy Airport, and the writer was writing a book. The book is published in the Library of Congress, and I have copies of it at home. I don't think it's so much, but it was for children, the airplane flight. And one segment was on air traffic control, and the fellow comes in and says, do you mind if I tape this? I said, no. And he puts the tape recorder on and said, ask me a question. And then about, I don't know, 50 minutes later, he said, could you just stop for a second so I could change the tape? So, you know, I've always liked interacting with people. If the movie business involves that, I'd enjoy it very much.
Yeah.
I don't know how to get into it, though. You know, I guess, how do you find an agent is a question. Everyone asks me that. Do you have an agent? I say, well, what do you do? Where do you go? Online? I mean,
ask Paul. Go. You know, it seemed to me to go to one of the majors and just say, because you're the.
If they invite us all back for the Academy Awards, which I heard there's a chance, I'll certainly ask them.
You know who else who has your personality? A really, really one of the most brilliant guys I know in this town. His name is Tom Sherrick, distribution guy.
I've heard that name, though.
And I had him out to a class that I was doing at Woodland Hills, one of those things where you get him show new movies, and he was the guest. And he has your way of talking. He's a meat and potatoes guy. You know, there's no BS.
Yeah, good.
And people like him right away because they like that straight.
I've had that that experience. And there are people who don't like me, I'm sure. But normally it's a matter that they feel intimidated for some reason. And I don't mean to do that at all. And I feel badly for them. And I try to relax them. But some people you can't get out of that.
Well, if someone doesn't dislike you in life, you're probably doing something wrong.
Absolutely, absolutely. I like the extremes. You either love me or hate me.
Yeah,
the mediocre stuff that you can have.
Yeah.